Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guest is Allison Martz.
Allison is a jewelry artist, an organizer, and dabbler in life. She lives with her partner, Diana, love that name, and her cat, Binks, in Petaluma, California, in a permaculture garden where foxes are now living. You can learn more about Allison and see her jewelry at alimarks.com. That's alimarks.com. Hello, Allison.
Hello, Sheridan and Diana.
Yes, yes. We are really looking forward to speaking with you in more detail and learning more about your life, your relationship, and your spectacular jewelry.
That's right.
But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer,
Greg Maralia. I'd love to change the world.
This is Greg Maralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of July 2nd, 2023. Anderson Lee Aldrich, the 23-year-old charged in the mass shooting at the gay Club Q in Colorado Springs last November, has pled guilty to murder and attempted murder charges in the case. Aldrich, who had faced 305 criminal counts, pled guilty to 5 charges of murder in the first degree and 46 charges of attempted first-degree murder. Anderson Lee Aldrich, who self-identifies as non-binary, said he was taking responsibility for the shooting of the LGBTQ club, but then blamed a, quote, very large plethora of drugs, end quote. Aldrich pleaded no contest to 2 hate crimes, one a felony and the other a misdemeanor. Family members of the victims told the Associated Press that Aldrich will avoid the death penalty as part of the plea agreement. He faces life in prison. The declaration came as prosecutors in the case notified victims that Aldrich would accept a plea deal guaranteeing life in prison, according to some of the survivors contacted by state authorities. Victims called Aldrich's mea culpa a disingenuous attempt to avoid the federal death penalty, as he described his actions in generalities like, quote, I can't believe what happened, and, quote, I wish I could turn back time. Those claims are at odds with the evidence of premeditation. Colorado doesn't have a death penalty. It was banned in 2020 by a law signed by Governor Jared Polis. Aldrich is also being charged in federal court and will still avoid the federal death penalty. And in Florida, a federal judge in Orlando temporarily blocked a federal law widely seen as an attack on the drag community. This is the second major loss in court for Governor Ron DeSantis this last week, coming days after another judge struck down the state's ban on Medicaid coverage of gender-affirming care. U.S. District Judge Gregory Presnell ruled against the drag ban after owners of restaurant Hamburger Mary's sued the state. The restaurant, which has locations around Florida, said the law regarding live entertainment threatened a weekly event featuring drag queens. Presnell issued an injunction barring the state from enforcing the law while the court case proceeds. The legal team that represented the Florida restaurant was the same one that won a ruling against a drag ban in Tennessee last month. Attorney Melissa Stewart said in a statement to the Advocate magazine, quote, this law is unconstitutionally vague, overbroad, and clearly targeted at drag performers. The judge's order reflects that, and this order will protect the First Amendment rights of not only our clients, but of the LGBTQI community across Florida while we move forward with the next steps in this litigation, end quote. And here in the Bay Area, the United States Senate confirmed the gay man to a federal district court seat in San Francisco, making it the first time an openly gay nominee has been appointed to a district court for what is often considered the world's gayest city. It also marked the second confirmation this year of a gay federal judge in Northern California. The Senate confirmed P. Casey Pitts by a vote of 53-46 on June 14th, with only 2 Republicans, Susan Collins of Maine and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, voting yes. Pitts is a labor side attorney and will now join the District Court of the Northern District of California, which covers the counties of Alameda, Contra Costa, Del Norte, Humboldt, Lake, Marin, Mendocino, Monterey, Napa, San Benito, San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, and Sonoma. Pitts's confirmation makes him the seventh openly LGBTQ federal district court appointee nominated by President Joe Biden. President Biden nominated most of these district court judges last fall, and some court watchers posting comments on various websites predicted the nominations would fail. Many polls in the fall of 2022 were suggesting Republicans would regain control of the Senate and reject Biden's nominees. But Democrats did hold on to the Senate last November, and the nominations were resubmitted with the start of the new congressional session. While Pitts is the first openly gay nominee to be confirmed to the federal district court here in San Francisco, Judge Vaughn Walker came out as gay after retiring from his seat on the San Francisco Federal District Court. Walker was the one who presided and ruled in the 2010 case challenging the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8, a voter-approved initiative that banned same-sex marriage. He ruled the initiative to be unconstitutional. That ruling was later upheld on appeal, including by the Supreme Court, and same-sex marriage became legal in California 10 years ago this June.
If you have a local LGBTQ news story, announcement, or an event you'd like to share with our listeners in this segment, tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatnews.com. Just click the Submit Event button at the top of the page. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, we are talking with Allison Marks. And Allison, we really want to thank you for giving us a little bit of your time from your very busy schedule.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, us too. We met you at Congregation Ner Shalom, which is the synagogue in Cotati. And every time we speak with you, you're just such a pleasant person. And we just thought we'd love to get you on our show and give you visibility about your jewelry and your life and your relationship with Diana. And so we'd just like to get to know you a little bit better. And this is a great format to do that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, like I said, I live here in Petaluma with my partner, Diana. Again, a great name. And I have been a lot of different places. I've done a lot of different things. And it's always, you know, I'm 54 years old now. And it's just fascinating to me, you know, where life is at any given moment, given all, you know, how did it end up here? And somehow it's all perfect and all the pieces fit together. Right now, what life looks like a lot is I'm a jewelry artist. This is something that I started about 20 years ago. I was living in San Francisco and I took a class at City College in San Francisco. I wanted to take ceramics and it was full. And so they said, we'll put you in metal arts. And I was like, wah, wah. But I fell in love with it. And I got really obsessed. I got really into it for about 3 years. And then I went through a breakup. And I just needed to be more social rather than in my cave, you know, and eventually my jewelry studio ended up in boxes and then it moved up here to Petaluma with me. And just before the pandemic hit, I had started to think about starting up again. And so it was actually kind of good timing. And now there's YouTube and, you know, online courses and things like that. So I was able to get connected pretty easily and like, you know, relearn the things like how do you turn on a torch without blowing up the house? That was an important one. But I love it. It's really, you know, I kind of have these two sides and it comes from my family. I have my mom's side is all artists and my dad's side is very more intellectual and has this sort of exacting nature about things. And I feel like I'm always walking the middle ground in between those two things. So the art has always been sort of second nature to me, but I never took it very seriously until I started doing jewelry back then. And since then I've been into painting and I love reading books about the creative process and listening to other people talk about that. And it's like life itself, right? What we're bringing something into being that didn't exist before. And with jewelry, it's kind of a, like I said, it's this balance between the artists and the lawyers of you have to be very exact and know all of the ins and outs and have those pieces of metal touching each other exactly. But I also like my favorite thing to do with it is like melt things and fuse things together and see what happens in the organic processes. And textures and shapes. And that's fascinating to me. And there's a beautiful alchemy in that. And there's a bringing together of all of the elements of fire and water and air and earth and other things that we can't see or put our hands on. And so there's a magic and a transformation that happens in that process that I'm pretty addicted to. And I, you know, it's a one expression of that in my life. I do sort of what you do is I produce interviews, and I'm doing it for a different company now than I did for about 8 years, 7 or 8 years until recently. I left that company. We produce online summits. So I produce interviews, and sometimes in the past I've hosted a lot of interviews. And so, yeah, so that's kind of pretty heady and spreadsheety. And I'm on the computer a lot for that part of my work. And I am also on the board at Ne'er Shalom at my spiritual community, one of my spiritual communities, and I'm the treasurer. So I get really heady with that too and put in a lot of time there. Sometimes some weeks that definitely is like a third job for me. And I'm here at my house with my partner and my cat. We had three cats until not too long ago, and two of them crossed the Rainbow Bridge, not just in the last few months. So we're down to one cat who gets like way too much lesbian love on him. And we have a big garden, and I swim about 3 days a week and like to spend time with friends. And, you know, I just feel like it's a really good life, and happy to be living it, and happy to have like these really different elements and to have been around a bit, like, you know, social media for all of its, you know, headaches. And sometimes it feels like a trap more than something that's freeing, but it does keep me in touch with people I've met on my journey up to this point. And I know a lot of really cool people. It's really neat sometimes to see. Sometimes there'll be a post something, and the people who like it or comment on it, I just imagine that, what if we brought all these people together in a room to have a conversation? They're so different, you know, everybody's so different. So it's really interesting times we live in. And, you know, there's a lot of heartbreak right now at a scale that is unfathomable, almost like I can't grasp it, what's really happening. And at the same time, what can we do? You know, we have to enjoy our lives. We have to enjoy our lives. It's imperative. So that's a line that I walk and that I think about a lot of how, you know, what's the best place for me? What's the best thing for me to be doing? And, you know, sometimes it's like, why am I bothering making art when I could be, you know, and it's not even like social commentary art. I've tried that. That's not in me. It's not my style. I wish I was more narrative and able to tell stories with what I make. But it's more energetic. Like what I do is on a more energetic level. So, but I still think it's really important. And I love the people that I meet through doing that. And yeah, it's a good life.
You mentioned earlier, you said it's a trap. What did you mean by that?
I think I was talking about social media, and that social media can be, for me, I get sucked in. I'm a scroller, man, you know. I'll just start scrolling. And then when I get into that mode, that becomes the context of my life rather than things that are more tangible and real around me in my world and relationships that are, I think it's important. You know, I don't want to say that's not real relationships, because I am connecting with real people who are important to me, but there's a richness in being in real life with people and building community that way. Sometimes I get in there and I know what's going on with people, or what I'm seeing is somehow real. And we all know the stories about how manipulated it all is too. And
I want to say, I'm glad I approached you to have this interview, Allison, because I love these interviews, Sharon, we do them with people in our community that we know a little bit about. And even those we know a lot about, we learn so much more. I just was really moved by the way you talked about your art and how it has impacted you or touched your life. It's really powerful in the way how you talked about it as being transformative for you. So I got to hear all this richness coming from you that I don't hear much because we don't talk as much. But I always love when we first introduced me to Diana at the temple, which was really great. And it's like, oh, another Diana. So that was nice. And we're going to learn all about you and Diana. But I just want to just say it's nice just hearing you talk and getting to know you more. It feels good. So
it's very good to be seen and heard. Thank you.
I want to echo that, Diana, because for me, I took a workshop from you last year. You gave a watercolor workshop.
That's right.
I've never
That's
used
right.
watercolors. I've been very intimidated by them. It's like, I can't do that. And you made it easy. You made it fun and you made it accessible to me. And I've used watercolors since. And so I really want to thank you. You're my first watercolor teacher.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I go through life and I have these art teachers and you're one of them, Allison.
Yay.
And I was curious about when you talked about your jewelry, you said there's all these elements and you mentioned fire and a torch and I can understand fire, but then you mentioned water. And I'm thinking to myself, what is she talking about water? So could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. Well, water is used all the time. When you heat things up, you also have to cool them down. And so water is really good for that. I use water. There are certain chemicals when I heat things up. Also, I use, or like if I'm soldering, I have to use something called flux, which allows the solder to flow on the seam between two pieces of metal that we're soldering together. And there's, you know, it's sort of a like a glassy, it turns kind of glassy. And to get that off, you have to put it in a solution and it's in hot, a water base. And I use water all the time to clean things, to cool things. I sometimes do, you know, there's different techniques you can use it for, but every piece of jewelry goes into the water multiple times.
Oh, did not know that.
Yeah. And even, you know, even I don't do the stonework myself, but if for people who are into lapidary, which is what the cutting stones is called lapidary, people who do that work, you have to use water as you're cutting the stones or the stones. Again, it's a cooling agent. It gets too hot and it also helps lubricate as you're going along. So it's, you know, water, you can't have a studio without the water. It wouldn't work.
Like tile setting. Like yeah. Tile cutting, right? Yeah, because I love cutting tile with the tile saw with the water. Do you know much about that?
You do mosaics?
No, countertops, floors, but yeah, mosaics too, you know, cutting pieces that you want to fit in.
Yeah, I don't think many people would know that water is so necessary for both of your crafts, you know, jewelry and tile setting.
Yeah, right.
Because I know a tile saw, you need water in there to keep it lubricated so it won't splinter and burn out your saw.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You also mentioned something about you don't make statements with your art or you don't do social something you said, and you said that's not in you and you do another kind of art. I mean, could you elaborate on that as well?
Sure. Well, like I started, well, I like I said, I've sort of always had this affinity to art. I've always done, like, you know, if a cool workshop comes up, I've done a lot of collage and soul collage, which I know you do, Sheridan. I've done workshops with you. And I've done like intuitive painting. I've taken a few classes that have been more skill-based, technical classes, but I really got into art when I was taking a monthly collage class. This is probably 2016 or so. I think it was about that 2015, 2016, taking a monthly collage workshop with this woman here in Petaluma. She's since left. And I loved it. And I got to a point after about a year where I was just like, I got to do this at home. And so, you know, I mounded up my dining room table full of all kinds of collage stuff. And I was a mad woman. I just made collages and collages and collages and different sizes. And I made them as gifts. And you know, eventually I had to reclaim my house from the mountain and the little bits of paper all over the place. And I said, I need something that's more contained. And like you, I didn't even know enough to be intimidated by watercolor. I just was like, well, that's something that I can do in a little space. And so I went and I got the cheapest watercolor set that there is. It was probably like ground up chalk, you know, in a tube or something. And I just started playing with it to see what would happen. And then I saw there was a woman on YouTube who I watched, and I was just about to give up, and her art was like just these swooshes of color and water and drips, and like it was wild, but they were beautiful. And I was like, well, I can do that, you know. And I just started playing and then I was like, yeah, that's okay. And I put the things I made, I kind of lined them up against the counter in the kitchen, against the backsplash. And the next day I walked by it and I was like, oh my God, look at that. I was so impressed with what had come through me. I couldn't see it at first. And then I got really excited. And then I just went wild and I got really into it. And a few months later, I was starting to get onto Instagram and just look at Instagram and see what else was out there. And there was a challenge of art. It's called Art Every Day for a Month. And I thought, well, I could do that. And so I said, I'm going to do art every day for a month. And one thing is that I'm good at, when I catch a good wave, I have really good discipline. So I did art every day for a month and I loved it. Even if it was 2 or 3 minutes, I did something every day just to keep my commitment. And I got done. And then I went to a painting workshop in Mexico with another teacher here, Chris Seidel. And that was amazing. And that was a big, like working in acrylics. I was working in acrylics. A lot of the other people were working in with tempera paints. So it was sort of like the painting experience, more intuitive painting. And then I decided to do art every day for a year. It was just an idea. And then I did it for another year. And then I started a third year. I didn't get through the third year. I got a few months, a lot of life happened in between them. My partner at the time passed away. She died from cancer. And it was a few months after that, I stayed with it through all of that. And then that was about 4 months later, I was like, just kept forgetting to do my art and it kind of lost its sparkle. I had other things to do at that time. But I play, like when I sit down to do my artwork. So coming back to your question of it's not representational, it's not narrative. I love illustrations and people who you look at a picture that they draw or they paint and it's a scene, it tells a story and you know exactly what's going on, or it makes a statement. Like one of the things I love the most, I used to live in San Francisco and the murals in the Mission District. You go down an alley or a street and every building has a different mural on it that tells a completely different story, but they're all full of story. They're full of richness. They're full of life. And I admire that so much. I wanted to be able to do that my whole life. I've never learned how to do that. I'm like, let's play, let's splash, let's see what happens if we try this. And I get into it and I just really get into the process way more. And then that's, you know, those are the kinds of workshops and things that I've been attracted to with my art. And so I have been sort of trained creatively, process over product. It's not about the end result. So they're sort of different things, you know. Telling a story is a very specific result. You want to have an impact. But I haven't been able to kind of come around the backside of my creative process to get to that yet. So maybe someday, but right now I'm working on jewelry, which has a little less potential for narrative than like a painting or an illustration or something. Not that you can't work it that way. There are lots of groups actually that are doing, you know, art jewelry for social change. But it doesn't come naturally. That part doesn't come naturally to me. I feel like I have a lot of things I want to say, a lot of things I want to stand up for, but it doesn't come through in that way for me. There's kind of different processes in my being.
It takes so much courage, I think, to have an empty canvas or some metal and just to decide you're going to play. And a lot of people don't have that kind of courage. They are involved in the product. And so that stops them from even experimenting, because they don't trust that the end product will be quote unquote good enough. I'm curious about art in your life and how it's made you the person you are.
That's a great question. Like I said, my mom was an artist. So I grew up, we always had tons of art supplies and it was something that I was exposed to a lot. And, you know, she'd take a class or get, you know, kind of get into something and like, it was normal for me, like sit here for 40 minutes and don't move while I do a pastel of you or something, you know, like that. Like that was just kind of a normal thing. I think also I tend to be really heady. I'm a really heady person. I think about things a lot and really deeply, and it gets me out of that, you know, and like there is an element of technique, you know, when I'm doing certain things, you know, like when I was painting a lot, I learned a lot about the different colors, even, you know, the same brand of, you know, you get a set of watercolors and the certain colors are going to act totally different because the pigments are actually completely different. Some are, you know, ground up rocks and others are dyes and others come from plants or, you know, they're completely, they act different. So there's this technical aspect that you kind of get better and better at. And the same with the jewelry. So there's like a discipline and a headiness to it that is always, I'm always like geeking out on it. Like I always want to know more. I always want to see what other people are doing and watch them, not to copy them, but like, I get really like, that's amazing. And how'd they do that? And I learn from what I'm seeing around me. That's just a really good question, Sheridan. I don't really know how to answer it, but I feel like it does inform who I am. It's not until recently that I've called myself or considered myself a quote unquote artist. I've done art, but that's definitely something that, you know, now I have a website. So it's sort of official now, you know, like I had to write an artist statement. And, you know, so I kind of in the process of doing that over the last couple of years, it's become more real for me. But I like it. I like being an explorer. I like doing something that doesn't have necessarily I don't even want to say it. You know, the word that comes up is value. Like, I didn't even want to say that. It's not valued as a product. You know, we're such a product centered everything for the economy. That's what our entire society is based on, not people, but product. You can productize art. I try not to. I do sell my stuff, but it's different. Like, I'm not making it to sell it. I'm making it because I need to make it, you know, not to make my living off of it. Not because I, you know, I couldn't be one of the artists who just mass produces the same thing or does 20 of the same kinds of earrings. I don't have that in me. It's like, I would have to do every pair of those 20. Maybe I could do 20 that are the same shape, but they'd all have to be a little different. Because you can't play doing the same thing over and over again.
The creative juices have to flow some kind of way, right?
Yeah. Because
in jewelry making, writing, painting, it's like if you do the same thing, it gets monotonous.
Yeah. And you have to be present. You know, I guess that is an answer I could give you is you have to be present in order to really be in your creative process. And that's really taught me a lot about life. That's for sure.
It's time for our music break, and we know that you brought a song with you, and we'd like you to introduce it and why you brought this particular song, and then we're going to share it with everyone. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about you and your coming out and your family and support and Diana and other things like that. So why don't you go ahead and introduce your song that you brought?
Okay, great. Well, this song is a song called Gracias a la Vida, and it's by a woman, a Chilean artist named Violeta Parra, and it's sung by an Argentinian artist named Mercedes Sosa. And I love this song. When I was in my 20s, I was an exchange student in Honduras, and I came back and I was in Latin American studies as an undergrad. Latin American studies and women's studies and a few other things, but those were the two main ones. And this song moved me so deeply. And I think anybody who hears it, who everybody's about to, will be really deeply moved. And the words are, gracias a la vida, thank you to life. And I didn't realize until today, I was looking at the lyrics, and it's actually about her man. So we'll ignore that part of it. You know, it's a love song, or we can, you know, work with that. We'll work with that. But it's still just a gorgeous song. And it just lists all these things in life that she's grateful for. And I always thought, I want this played at my funeral, because I just want to say thank you to life. It's been a good one so far.
Thank you so much for bringing it. All right, everybody, we are going to be listening to Gracias a la Vida, and we'll see you on the other side.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto. Me dio dos luceros que cuando los abro perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco, y en el alto cielo su fondo estrellado, y en las multitudes del hombre que yo amo. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado el oído que en todo su ancho graba noche y días, grillos y canarios, martillos, turbinas, ladridos, chubascos, la voz tan tierna de mi bien amado. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado el sonido y el abecedario, con él las palabras que pienso y declaro, madre, amigo, hermano y luz alumbrando la ruta del alma del que estoy amando. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado la marcha de mis pies cansados, con ellos anduve ciudades y charcos, playas y desiertos, montañas y llanos, y la casa tuya, tu calle y tu patio. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me dio el corazón que agita su marco cuando miro el fruto del cerebro humano, cuando miro el bueno tan lejos del malo, cuando miro el fondo de tus ojos claros. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado la risa y me ha dado el llanto, así yo distingo dicha de quebranto, los dos materiales que forman mi canto, y el canto de ustedes que es el mismo canto, y el canto de todos que es mi propio canto. Gracias a la vida.
Proof. We are talking with Allison Marks, artist extraordinaire, And we are into the part of the interview about your more personal life. And we want to get to know you a little bit better in that realm.
Yes. Yeah, there's so much. I'm thinking about earlier in the interview when you talked about your partner and your new partner, Diana. And so we want to talk to you about that. And I met Diana. We met Diana at the temple. And so tell us about how long you've been together and whatever you want to share about you and that new relationship. And I see you smiling, but our listeners can't see, but we can see you smiling. So please do tell.
Well, she's something to smile about. I'll say that. So we met in 2010 and she was teaching a spiritual class that I took and I thought she was very cute and I brought her tea. She told me to tell you that actually. She said, tell them you brought me tea. So I brought her tea and then the rest is history. No. So anyhow, that's how we met. And we were together for 2.5 years at that time. And then we were not together after that. We broke up. And as I mentioned, it was about 6 months later, I got with my partner who I mentioned earlier died. We were together for about 5 or 6 years before she passed away. She had a really serious cancer, got very sick and got better. And then it came back. It was not gone from her body. And she was gone within 6 weeks when we found out. Yeah. So I was with her a lot and it was inconceivable to live life without her. And, you know, life goes on. So there's so many things I can say about that if you want, come back around and talk about that some more. But since you asked about Diana, we did not talk for about, well, I moved out of San Francisco in 2014 and we didn't talk at all from just a little bit after I left San Francisco until 2020. So about 6 years, we didn't even, we think we were friends on Facebook. So we kind of kept an eye on each other, but we needed space. And then we reconnected and she came up for a visit. We had lunch and there's nothing on my mind. I think on either one of our minds that we might possibly get back together. And then she came back again for a visit with her. She has a van that's an RV. She had bought it just before COVID and then COVID hit. And after a few months, she started just going out on these journeys in the van and was enchanted with that lifestyle. And she was like, why do I have this apartment? Why am I paying for this apartment? I can, you know, just be on the road. So she was just gave up her apartment and was wandering around and she was able to work remotely. It didn't matter where she was. So she was having great adventures. And I had told her when she came for lunch, hey, if you need a place to park the van, I've got space here. So she showed up and she's still here. That was in, that was in January of 2021. And a couple months, 3 months later in April, we took off. I quit my job. And we took off for 2.5 months and drove around the country and had a wonderful adventure. Like we just went for it. So she's been over here ever since. And, you know, we, like any relationship, of course we have challenges, but we also are really committed to doing the work. She's very committed to doing the work. And I have to admit, sometimes I feel like she carries that for us. It's really good. We're in a really good place in our relationship right now. And I'm really happy. We're very different people. Very different people.
So,
oh, well, I'm out here. She really kind of just not called to be on a radio show or, you know, like it's not in her, not in her DNA. She's engaged in the world. We're just doing it in very different ways. You know, I'm very heady. I like things, like I need things to all make sense. She's like, she just needs to get things done. You know, like we're different. And I learn a lot from her. And she's really good with me too. Like when we can both calm down and have a really good conversation instead of being reactive, we learn. I feel us learning and growing together. So it's really rich. And there's obviously something that we're doing together because we came back, you know, like I said, I just never in a million years would have thought that. I was, when we were done, I was done. I didn't think we'd ever be back together. But I feel like we've been together now about the same amount of time, 2.5 years, same amount of time that we were together in our first round. And I wasn't both feet in. I'm totally both feet in now. And just feel like I have this great opportunity and able with her, I think probably more than any other relationship I've ever been in, to walk relationship as a path of growth and transformation and knowing myself more. So like I said, we're not perfect by far, but pretty darn good. And she's super cute.
2 months on the road together. Wow. You must have learned a lot about each other.
Yeah.
That's when the dating really hit.
Right.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about how you described yourself as you take a blank canvas and you just play. And Diana took a huge leap of faith and she had so much courage to give up her apartment and just go play and explore and have an adventure. Whereas it, you know, her van and she driving it wasn't in the world before she started out. So I see this parallel of you both, you know, maybe you're in your studio, but she was out on the road, but you both have this courage that I just think is spectacular.
Thanks. Thank you. That's a nice reflection. Yeah. Yeah. And we probably learned from each other that courage in different ways.
And when you were saying that she wants to just get things done and you want to understand things, Diana and I have the same dynamics. She just wants to get things done. And I want to understand what we're doing so that I can do it with some kind of intellect.
Yeah.
You do that with recipes too. She's the recipe queen and I'm just
put it together.
Is Diana that way too?
Throw it in the pot.
Yeah.
That's great. How we are that way.
It is true though. You can learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say?
I said, you Dianas.
Exactly. We'll talk more about that later. But anyway.
So tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Like, when did you know you were gay and how did your family and your friends react when you told them? When did you come out?
Well, I had some crushes, you know, here and there in high school and college. And in college, I had one of the most fiercest crushes I had was on a very good friend of mine. And she was actually my first girlfriend. And it was at the very end of college, like that last few months, the last semester or whatever of college. And when we hooked up and I was not ready to come out at all. I was not ready. I was president of the Feminist Student Association at school. I was all in, like, but those lesbians scared me. So I just
say more about that. We want to know how they scared you.
I think I didn't understand it. Yeah, I didn't understand it. I mean, I knew, like, there was part of me that always knew I was going to be with a woman. Like, I just felt very open and I felt like that's the direction I was called in. But I didn't think of it like an exclusion to men. You know, I didn't think, oh, that means I won't get married or have the life that I was always told I was going to have. I didn't kind of put together what that might mean for what my life might look like. And yeah, when I was with this woman, I couldn't go there. To me, it was about me and her and nothing outside of our little bubble. You know, that was really the first time I fell in love. You know, we had been friends for years and were really close. And then it only lasted like 4 months, I think. It was not that long, but boy, did I crash and burn at the end of that one. That one really hurt. She left. Yeah. You don't need to hear the whole story, but that's when I knew it was sort of like her breaking up with me was the catalyst for me coming out because I was feeling so much at that time. I felt so devastated. So it was like, I had to, there was no way that couldn't be my truth, that was important to me. So that's really when I came out and I had some really beautiful experiences. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, And I was on a camping trip by myself at that time. And I, you know, it was like I just opened to God or something. It was just like a really, really, truly basic life experience of like something big is happening here and I have to tell the truth. And I was on a beach. I was on the East Coast camping by myself. I just remember I had never felt that way before. And it was like, I was being directed, you know, I was being told to live truthfully. And so that's kind of what came out. That's when I came out. So I came back home and she had moved out. She was staying at my house for most of that time and she had left and I was so devastated, but I, you know, eventually came around and, there were, you know, this was before the internet or anything. And there was like, there was a feminist bookstore in Cincinnati and they had a coming out group and a lesbian social talk circle every week. So I'd go to those and I got friends. And then about 6 months later, I had an internship and I moved to Europe for a year and New York City for part of that time. And I was in a very international scene and I just kind of got thrown into these amazing life experiences where like I was working for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom at the United Nations. I was the human rights intern. And so I was going to all the human rights meetings at the UN. And I actually, with some people there, I was very activist-y in college, you know, very, very much about we have to make a good world. So I had to go that way. That's just who I was, right? So there were about, I think, four of us from different NGOs at the UN, and we created this task force. I made an intervention at the UN Commission on Human Rights. It was the very first intervention ever on how violations against gay and lesbian people were violations of the International Declaration of Human Rights. So I have that somewhere, but it was, you know, I did it in the name of the organization I was working for. And it was, you know, it was the early 90s. It was a very different time. So, you know, I've done big things like that. And then, you know, came back and I ended up moving after that year. I ended up moving to Albuquerque and I was in New Mexico for a couple years before I moved to San Francisco. And when I was in Albuquerque, that was the best. I worked at the feminist bookstore there, which was just the hub of the universe. And I got to meet amazing people and be in that whole feminist women's space. Ideas, activism, books.
Yeah, I was just going to say you're activist as well.
Yeah, not so much now, but I feel like I always feel that pull. I don't like quote unquote do much right now. I feel like it infuses through me into my artwork. I just carry that signature, but I really suffered for a lot of years because I felt like I'm not doing enough. You know, I'm not doing enough. I got to do something, right? But I do me. Yeah, for a lot of years I did that. And then I moved to San Francisco in 1995 and I came for grad school and I ended up writing my thesis on what sustains activism because I was really interested in that very question of how do you keep it alive? I interviewed people who've been social change activists for 20 years or longer. We did these really in-depth interviews and that's a core question for me. You know, how does change happen? That was my master's was at California Institute of Integral Studies in a program they don't have anymore. It was called the Organizational Development and Transformation. Like, how does change happen in groups of people? That's a core question that I have, and especially in activist and nonprofit groups. There's, you know, the people with the biggest hearts in the world and that are the most dysfunctional, right? I was a part of so many groups that just couldn't, you know, really wanted to do the right thing and just couldn't because they kept getting in their own ways. And just like sort of my lesbian identity, I'm moving here, you know, by the time I got to San Francisco, here, especially compared to even New Mexico, but definitely Ohio, where I came from, in San Francisco, nobody cares if you're a lesbian or what. It's like a non-issue. You're just you, right? You just kind of go around being you and everybody's who they are and you're who you are. And I didn't need to make any noise. I didn't feel like I needed to make noise in San Francisco like I did in other places where I had lived. And life kind of went on. And I had, you know, various relationships over the years. And, you know, Diana starting in 2010, like I said. Yeah, that's kind of my journey.
So who are your support system back then? Who did you come? Did you ever come out to your mom and your dad, your family, whoever?
I wouldn't say that my family was my support system. They weren't antagonistic, but they also still don't really know how to talk about much in those veins. My sister is an exception. She came out a few years after I did, and she was in a relationship with a woman from her, I think it was her sophomore year in college until she was in her early 30s. And we don't even really talk about, we didn't talk about it that much because we weren't close in that way. I think we're much closer now than we were then. It wasn't my family. I think it was more friends and people I did things with, you know, people I, you know, friends I met through different activities I was involved in and things like that. And, you know, I've done a good share of therapy and personal development work, spiritual growth, that kind of thing. But yeah, my family, I feel like are supportive in other ways, but not that way. You know, I know that they love me.
I mean, do you, can you take Diana home with you? And
oh yeah. Oh yeah. And they're very friendly and definitely. Yeah. They're home with me and my parents really like her and my sister Amy really likes her. They like each other a lot. In fact, my sister texted both of us yesterday because we were at a concert, Indigo Girls concert yesterday, and we had an extra ticket and we had invited my sister. She couldn't come, but she had texted to say, how was the concert? And Diana and her are the ones who got in the conversation about it. I didn't even have anything to say.
Who's the older sister?
I'm older and my sister is 3 years younger than me.
Is your family back in Ohio, your parents?
They left. They went to Florida. So my parents are in Florida. My sister's in Oakland. So we're both out here and we get to see each other from, you know, not a lot, you know, but from time to time.
Well, this has been really great talking with you, Allison. Do you have any words of wisdom for our listeners? I mean, we always like to ask our guests for philosophy of yours or, you know, what you live by, how you can help somebody who might be listening to your story.
Thank you for asking. You know, I always look at, especially from the, I was sharing with you about how I'm always looking at like the higher perspective of things. I want to understand how things work. I want to, you know, and when I was in grad school way back a million years ago, I learned about systems theory, and it's sort of like a scientific and social way of looking at spirituality. Like we're all connected, everything's connected. And I think in life to solve problems or to move to a different place, there's different approaches. And then there's this balance between, like I say, going higher and looking at things from a higher perspective. So if you have a problem where two things are opposing each other and you're trying to figure out, or they don't seem to fit together, they always fit together. You just have to get a higher perspective about it. And at the same time, sometimes the way to get the higher perspective is to go deeper and lower into your heart and your soul and to get quiet and to listen inside. It's not a, again, it's not a head thing. It's like, you know, balancing these different parts of ourselves, or like the parts of ourselves that live and get activated in the different chakras of ourselves. And so we can't just live all in our head. And, you know, I just see each person, like we're just a net of points of light around the planet and around everywhere. And anybody who's listening, you're a bright light. We're all these beautiful, gorgeous, bright lights, and our work is to like slough off. And sometimes you have to chip away or get a jackhammer, or, you know, sometimes it's really hard work. And sometimes it's the most gentle, easy work to just let it go, you know, let go all this stuff that's covering up your light. You are shining brighter than you even know, but, you know, let the garbage on the outside go as much as you can and shine. Mm.
Beautiful.
I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah, before we end completely, I think it's important for you to just say something about your jewelry and how they contact you if they're interested in
thank
that.
You.
Because we've seen some of it and it's beautiful.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, my jewelry is I think it's very earthy and like, I don't know, I definitely have my own style, and it's earthy and elemental, you know. And I do have a website, an online store. It's alimarks.com, AliMarks. And so you can see some of the things I've made. If there's, you know, something that you're interested in, also I do work with people to create, you know, to create pieces. When not always, like I can't, I know I'm not the person to just take any old commission, but sometimes, you know, especially if there's something you've seen on my site that you could say, I want this ring band with that kind of top and this color of stone. And I've got a gazillion stones. I had so many stones to work with. So, if you have an idea of a kind of stone that you like, can work with that. And yeah, just, be in touch. I love to talk to people. I just did the Art at the Source tour. It's an open studio tour here in Sonoma County. And I loved it. I love talking to people and just hearing what they're interested in and seeing where their interests lie. So thank you for asking. And I welcome conversations with anybody, and just go take a look, get inspired. No obligation.
That's great. Wonderful. And we really want to thank you, Allison, for joining us this evening. And we want everyone to remember that, just like Allison, you too can be living proof that by doing your passion, by living your life authentically, by being that bright light, you can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can do the same. Yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never. So many answers, I don't know.
There are so many answers.
Realize that to question is how we grow.
To question is to grow.
So I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.